Okay, this coming Shabbos, we are going to have the opportunity to enjoy together as we go through one of the most interesting parshas in the Torah, Parshas Baha'alosecha. And of course, this is one of those parshas where you can talk about any single one episode in the parsha, and it would take us all day, and certainly to touch on every episode in the parsha will also take us forever. And so instead, we'll focus our different thoughts on different aspects of the parsha. The one I'm going to start with, recognizing that I'm skipping over into it, is the story of the Pesach Sheni, where Bnei Yisrael turn to Moshe Rabbeinu in the beginning of Perek Tes and make the declaration, Lama Nigara, there were two people who were Tameh, and they couldn't bring the Pesach in the right time, and they say to Moshe Rabbeinu, why should we lose out from being able to bring the Karban of Hashem with Ibisoch Bnei Yisrael within Am Yisrael? And the question has to be asked, what did they mean when they said, why should we lose out from bringing Karban Hashem Besoch Bnei Yisrael, right? From being able to bring it within the nation. Karban Pesach is a personal obligation. Karban Pesach is something I have to bring. So why do we talk about it as being among all of Am Yisrael? So Reb Nissen Alpert, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, explained that the Karban Pesach is a public Karban, and it's identified as a public Karban. It's just not funded by the public as a whole. It's only offered on behalf of those who are counted in the group bringing it. And thus, if someone's not able to be counted, then she or he loses the chance, to be included in the tzibur. And it's as if he or she doesn't count. And that's the intent that Bnei Yisrael are arguing over here. We shouldn't lose the chance to count in a Karban tzibur within Bnei Yisrael. If you take away that chance from us, you take away the chance we have from being counted, then by definition, we do not count. And that, they said, is not fair. And so this becomes the basis of the storyline of the Karban Pesach. A person needs to understand Pesach Sheni is really a lesson about saying we count as well. Then Moshe Rabbeinu gets commanded by Hashem to make two chatzotzros, two trumpets made from silver. Now, why are the chatzotzros made out of silver specifically? Sort of a Ganak, the head of the OU, Rav Menachem Ganak, actually, who was once my Rebbe in NYU, he explained that the silver is the currency of economy. Silver brings people together, and hence the word for silver is also the word for currency, kasef. And the goal of the chatzotros also was to bring people together for all sorts of different purposes. And so hence it needed to be silver. Gold is a more individualistic item. It's more of an individualistic metal. I have it, you don't have it. There's nothing that ties us together with the gold. And so therefore, the silver is the issue over here to call the people together. Moshe Rabbeinu tells his father-in-law Yisro, please don't leave us. Al not tazovo sanu, we are told at the end of Perek Yud, ki al ken yadata chanosenu bamidbar, you know about how we've camped over here, the hayisalanu le'enayim, we want you to be our eyes. Now Rashi notes that Moshe was making a request of Yisro not to leave. But why was Moshe so concerned about Yisro's departure? And what does he mean that Yisro is supposed to be the eyes of the people? What was his message in that context? So the late great Mashgiach of the Lakewood Yeshiva, Reb Nosson Tzvi Wachfogel, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, explained that Yisro's journey to Judaism was the quintessential journey of a person who had it all. Yisro was a leader in the world of Avodah Zarah, and he left it all behind because he found the truth. He was persecuted when he found the truth. His daughters were persecuted. He lived almost as if he was a heathen. He was excommunicated because of his beliefs. And notwithstanding, Yisro withstood the tests. And he did it all by himself. So Yisro serves as an image of a person whose personal investment in a relationship with Hashem was not temporary. It was permanent. And thus Yisro represents the ideal service to Hashem from and with a personal commitment to Hashem, which is an ideal image for us to live up to. When we are walking among ourselves, we need to open our eyes and we need to ask ourselves, what are we up to? What are we doing? And how are we going to do it? And so then we're told that Moshe Rabbeinu was told to establish a sense of the Zakenim. And who is to be selected as being among the Zakenim? you have to identify 70 people, asher yadatikim ziknei ha'am v'shoterav, that you know that those people are the elders of the nation and its officers. Now, why do you need the people who are chosen to be zikenim to be the elders and the officers, the police, the shotrim? So the Medrash reminds us that these 70 people were the people, the officers who were hit when the people didn't produce the necessary number of bricks in Egypt. These people took one for the team, and therefore they became the team's leaders. What's the connection between taking one and then being able to be a leader? So Baruch Mordechai Ezrachi Shalita notes that care and worry about people is something that doesn't go unpaid. Those who have that extra layer of attention, of worry, of rachmanas, of care, are those who are ready to lead the people. If you have that extra layer, then you've got it. And if you've got it, then you can go ahead and use it to take care of the people and to represent them in the in that context. And therefore, these people had to be chosen because they were the ones who were ready to proceed. The Torah then tells us the story of the Asaf Sufa Sher Bekirbo Hisavu Taiva, the sin of the desirers. Now, what's the sin of being a desirer? And the Torah tells us that Vayicharaf Hashem Bam Me'od, that Hashem got very angry at them Me'od, a lot. What's the big deal? What was the big Aveira? So the author of the Nesiva Shalom, the Slonim Rebbe, explained that the problem with the people was that they sort of means to have someone teach them Taiva, to teach them to be desirous. And so when a person replaces the emotional drive towards a desire with Hashem, and replaces that with a cheap desire that's more attainable than a meaningful one, then Hashem is doubly upset with that person. In the world of addiction, for instance, the deeper-rooted desire of connection in the case of a sexually-based addiction, of contentment in the case of a eating disorder or an eating desire or a drug desire or a sense of just letting things go in the case of an alcohol desire or in the case of the need for thrill in one's life in relationship that gets replaced with a gambling desire, the person is giving away that which is deep for something that which is cheap. And this makes Hashem quite upset, for not only is it missing Hashem, the person is the thrill is misplaced, and it's quashing a capacity for Yedias Hashem that's true and meaningful and deep. And this gets Hashem very angry. You have it. You have the desire for it. Now seek it out from something deeper. Find it and put it into your life. And this becomes a challenge that's identified in the parasha. And so what do the people complain about when they have that desire? So they declare, Zacharnu es hadagash anochal b'mitzrayim chinam. We remember the fish that we ate in Egypt for free. Were they really telling the truth? Did they really eat for free? They were slaves. I can't think of anything more non-free than that. The fish that they ate, they paid for with their lives. So Sivan Rav Meir, in her weekly closing on the news programs in Israel, calls this the early reference to fake news. And it exists in the annals of people's minds of nostalgia. We remember things in the past in a more glorified manner than is really accurate, and we tend to make false and negative comments about the present state of things as a result. We tend to look around and say, okay, we remember the way it used to be, and the danger of fake news is often tragic and results in terrible consequences. It seems almost crazy to think that the Jews who left Mitzrayim in fine fashion with all the great signs and the makos, and then received the Torah, and then received the daily man, and were in control of their own destiny, would really trade it for some herring and some garlic. But then again, asks Mrs. Meir, aren't we guilty sometimes of doing the same thing when we look back on the way things used to be, and we also mess it up in our heads? We have to be mindful of that and see it as a difference. Towards the end of the parasha, we're told about the relationship between Moshe and his sister Miriam. And God turns in and jumps into the storyline here, and he says, Lo chein avdi Moshe. It's different the way I talk to Moshe. Because when I speak to Moshe, pal pal daber bo, I speak to him face to face. Rav Shechter Shlita would often point out to us that this comment in the parsha is also the connection to the Haftorah, because Hashem notes that Moshe Rabbeinu was the Adon HaNevi'im, the master prophet, and his prophecies were qualitatively different than those of the other Nevi'im. Chazal described the prophecies of the other Nevi'im as compared to one who is an aspaklaria she'ena me'ira. The person looks through, like he's looking through an obscure glass. And Moshe, his prophecies were comparable to an aspaklaria ha'me'ira, someone who's looking through things with a clear glass. The Rambam Memor Nevuchin, Rav Shachter would quote, uses the prophecy of Zechariah in the Haftorah as an example of how obscure some prophecies were. In the Haftorah, Zechariah sees a vision of a menorah, and he has to turn to the Malach and ask the Malach, hey, what am I looking at? We see that in addition to superficial connections between the Torah reading and the Haftorah, there's a deeper connection. The Haftorah highlights the idea that prophecies of other prophets were comparable to looking through an obscure glass. Moshe Rabbeinu, it does not have that comparison. Moshe Rabbeinu sees God on a deeper level, and this is one of the tenets of our faith, that Moshe Rabbeinu is the Adon HaNevi'im, and that this is one of the things we have to understand when we relate to him and think about what he does and how he does it. Finally, in the Haftorah, we also read about Ma'ela Adoni. He asks the question, what are these things? Don't you know what these things are? And so, what's the connection between the olives and the spirit of Hashem? And what did Zechariah take away? He says, hallo, hallo yadata, and hallo, what are we supposed to take away? So Rav Eliyahu Schlesinger Shlita, the Rav of Gilo, explains that Zechariah was not able to tell if the Nevuah was about the present time or in the future. And the olives represented the Shemen HaMishcha, but they were missing in the second Beis HaMikdash. It could possibly be disturbed in the future through the capture by the enemy. But Ruach Hashem would ultimately serve as the creator of Kedusha, and that Ruach Hashem, lo b'chayil v'lo b'koach ki'im b'ruchi, that would never be destroyed. We wait for that period in our lives. Lo b'chayil v'lo b'koach ki'im b'ruchi amar Hashem Tzavakos. And may HaKadosh Baruch Hu make it so that we get a chance to see that Ruach Hashem and get to experience it firsthand. Ki b'ayin b'ayin yiru b'shuv Hashem es shivas Tzion b'shuv Hashem Tzion, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and returns to Tzion, and Be'ezus Hashem will take us as well. Shabbat Shalom to all.